We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Wake that ass up
early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Jess Hilarious, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got some special guests in the building.
Yes, indeed.
We got little brother little here. Brother.
Absolutely.
Fonte and Big Pooh. How y'all brothers feeling, man?
Hey, man. Good, man. We alive.
That's all you can ask for nowadays,
that's
right?
That's it. 2024,
that's
man.
It. That's it.
Thankful.
They got the new documentary, May the Lord Watch, the little brother's story. Mm. Why that title?
I mean, first it, we started this when we were making the album, Made a Little Watch. Mm-hmm.
2018.
So this was kind of like to bring an end to that era. And it just made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just really made sense. Like thinking about everything that we kind of went through and survived. The Lord had to be watching over us.
Yeah.
There was no other fucking explanation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, nah, man, that was just kind of felt like a conclusion of that chapter. And, yeah, 5 years in the making, man. So it's out now on YouTube.
Well, let's start from the beginning for people that don't know who Little Brother is and how y'all got together and how you met, which is pretty dope. You brothers met at HBCU.
Absolutely.
North Carolina Central.
North Carolina Central University. Shout out Eagle Pride. This is Durham, North Carolina. I came in 97.
I came in 98.
Yeah, we met
in 98.
In 98, that was where we met.
Are you from originally Virginia?
I'm from Virginia.
Supposed to go to Old Dominion. My wife went to Old Dominion. She graduated from Old Dominion. That's how I know.
I still got my ID.
You still got your ID?
from when I went to orientation. I still got the ID.
Okay. Why you didn't want to tell your mama though? Why you waited till the day before? I'm confused.
That would have got
you
ass.
She exaggerated, fam. It wasn't the day before. It was a week before. Still. I mean, that was my first big decision as, you know, an 18-year-old mm-hmm. was making that decision. And I mean, she let me make the decision for myself, but it's still my mom. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't cuss in front of my mama to this day. You know what I mean?
I ain't cuss, but
nah, I mean, but still, it's one of the things, like, I have a healthy fear of my mom. And so,
I like that. I never heard of healthy fear.
Yeah, it's a healthy fear. My mom got Napoleon complex, fam.
Does she not like HBCUs? Cause, I mean, you were going to HBCU free.
It wasn't the HBCU thing. It was I was going to be living with my uncle. So her brother. So she knew, like, yo, you good.
You good.
You
yeah.
down there with family. None of us had been to Durham, North Carolina. None of us had heard of North Carolina Central. So for her, it was just a shock. Like, what? who, what, where you going? I thought you was going to be, you know, where I had a hand on you. So,
and she went to, that was her alma mater too, right?
Nah, my mom didn't go to college.
Okay, okay,
she went to, she went to nursing school. So okay, she didn't go to college. But, so yeah, so it was just one of those things where it happened. I literally got in Central. It happened in like a week, time. You know what I'm saying? Like the whole process from asking to, do you want to go, to me doing paperwork and all, it happened in like a week. So it was just moving and I was like, oh shit, I'm in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going. Okay, now I gotta tell my mom.
It was free though. I would think she'd be happy.
Yeah.
She was happy. That's the thing. Like she was happy for me, but it was just the thing of, this isn't where we thought you were going.
This wasn't the plan I had.
I mean, yeah. This wasn't the plan I had. This is your plan now. Now, I think it was the realization of, it goes from my plan for you to your plan for you.
Got you.
You don't have that control anymore.
And mm-hmm. I'm her, you know, I'm her youngest son. So it was just one of them things of like, shit, I got to let go now. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it was.
So you got to college and you guys met each other. So talk about that process, how you guys met. I know a lot of this is actually in the documentary.
Yeah,
but how you guys met and what attracted you guys together. And then you started this rap group that became Underground Legends.
Man, it was very organic. I met Pooh. Well, first I met Ninth. We met, we met first in 98.
We met in 98.
We met through a mutual friend. Ninth was on campus and he was, we was moving in the dorm. Like we saw each other just in the dorm and, over Source Magazine, we started chopping it up. All this is in the doc, but long story short, we basically just kind of started, you know, working together. This was at a time when, you know, it was at the time, this is like 98. So this is when No Limit is like killing everything.
In the South, especially, yep.
Yeah. So HBCU, No Limit at like the Ghetto D album drop my freshman year. That was all you heard in every room. Like, we was bumping that shit nonstop.
Nobody made crack like this.
Listen, what?
Ghetto dope.
Listen, man, we ran ghetto dope. So, but so everybody was pumping that. So if you were a kid that was into like raucous or sound bombing, like, you know, meeting someone else that was into that, that was kind of rare. You know what I mean? So when you met somebody that was on that same wavelength, it's like, oh shit, I found my people. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of linked up and just started making records. And
for people out there, when he said Ruckus record, you got to tell them because somebody might know because Ruckus doesn't
exist contextualize
anymore.
It. Yeah,
Ruckus was the label that, you know, I would say.
Lyrical, miracle, spiritual.
Very lyrical
criminal.
Label.
Yeah. Umbilical.
Lyrical, I like how he keep asking you questions.
Lyrical,
and then
backpack
answering.
Rappers. That type of thing.
That's he can't help it, Jay.
You know, I just want to break so out because they said Ruckus. Somebody might not know what Ruckus
is. Yeah, Ruckus. Nah, it was, you know, it was very much, they were like, it was an underground label, but it was, you know, I mean, most, Quali, you know.
Pharrell Munch.
Pharrell Munch. It was like pretty much all
Eminem was on Ruckus Soundbomb.
Yeah, he was on Soundbomb. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were just, you know, putting out amazing stuff that we really enjoyed. And so, we just kind of started making records. Put some stuff up on the internet and
boom.
We had
and
a record.
What your sound is like today? For those who don't know, how would you describe your sound today, like now?
It's not the same.
Mm-hmm. It's not the same, but it's still us.
It's still us. Yeah. It's weird. It's like our sound has evolved musically, but it still sound like Little Brother.
Yeah, like when I had after our last album came out, May Lord Watch, and then we just put out two singles last October. With Wish Me Well and Glory Glory.
September.
And one of the biggest compliments we got was that somebody said, yo, I can make a LB playlist from y'all stuff 20 years ago to now, and it sounds like y'all haven't missed a beat. I can't tell that it's dated. It doesn't sound, it still sounds timeless. And that was something I think we always strive for. So that's, if I had to describe it, I would just say it's timeless.
Can I ask you a question about just being from the South? When you first, this is random, but when you first heard Ghetto Dope, right? Didn't you think it was kind of blasphemous? Just a little bit. Just a little
yo,
bit.
Yo, I was
and I loved the song.
I was jamming it too hard, man.
Like, yeah, why didn't have right time to
think about it? Dude, man, I played Ghetto Dope. Man, we ran that whole album trying to do something. That was Moby Dick was doing all the hooks.
These are rappers, you pause worthy people. Okay. I know you heard me say Ghetto D and Moby Ghetto Dick. This is an album
when
and rapper.
When I go back and say you gotta explain it.
Master P, that's a rapper. You can say it. All right.
Oh no, that's explainable. That's explainable.
Man, we Bourbons and Lax, we ran that album left to right, man. So I didn't really think of it as blasphemous. I just thought it was, I looked at it as Pete paying homage to that era. You know what I'm saying? Paying homage to Rod and all of them. So I love that album.
But you guys also came out in the era where the DJ and the producer was part of the group, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Whether it was, of course, Run DMC, Jam Master J, Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff, Salt-Pepper Spinderella.
Damn, they ain't that old.
Gangstar.
But we grew up on that, though.
But Gangstar. Yeah. But Gangstar.
Gangstar, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Primo,
UGK.
You
know,
right. Nah, legit.
And Ninth Wonder was part of Little Brother in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not here now, so what's the relationship with Ninth Wonder? Is there no more relationship?
There's no more relationship, but there's no, I mean, we talk about it in the doc, but nah, we're just separate entities, you know what I'm saying? That we came in the game together, but we're Little Brother, he's Ninth Wonder, and we're just separate entity that we coexist peacefully, you know what I mean? And that's just what it is. But
why didn't
no
he participate in the doc, though? Because, I mean, this is the Little Brother story.
That's a question for him.
Yeah.
And the story is old, you know, but, like, I would like to have heard his perspective of it now as well. Did y'all reach out to him?
We absolutely, asked. Yeah. We reached out, you know what I'm saying, made it clear that, you know, this wasn't going to be a hit piece. We wasn't coming for nobody next, you know. We're just telling our story in just a beautiful, honest way. And he just chose not to participate, and that's his right to.
I feel like y'all set him up nice, especially when you first told the early story about... I forgot what album it was, but it was an album. I think it was Afu-Ra.
Afu-Ra,
produced by DJ Premier, and he was like, "Yo, that's what I want to be." And one of y'all encouraged him, like, "Yo, you can be that."
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, man. We were always, I mean, we coming up. I mean, you got to keep in mind, like, dude, we like 19, 20 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we're just trying to figure out, let alone trying to figure out how to be artists,
trying to figure out how to be men.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, trying to figure out all that stuff at the same time. I mean, man, it's tough. So, but we tried to tell the story just as honestly as, you know, as we could. And, but you know, we can't speak for another person. We can mm-hmm. only tell our experience. Right. And so he chose not to, and that's his right.
Mm-hmm. What made y'all want to do the documentary right now? Is it anything other than the fact that y'all been 20 years in the game?
I mean, 20 years, but
legit.
We talked about it. We just wanted to tell our story our way. You know, we didn't want it to be, unsung or
told by somebody
told by somebody else, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Or, you know, so they can pick their angle, their slant or whatever. And we want it to be our story, our voices, our way. And so we said, let's do it. And we just started the journey. We didn't know what we was doing, but we started the journey,
yeah. Man.
2018. And it just took us time to kind of, figure out the story we wanted to tell and how we wanted to tell it. And I think the pandemic actually helped us tremendously. Because yeah. that version
house.
Of the movie now is that's the third version.
Wow. Yeah, y'all been trying to
knock it down. Yeah.
And it's just very, it's something that, you know, with documentaries, I mean, they're tough. And yeah. I think a lot of filmmakers, they will try to do docs because they think that it's easier because you're telling a factual story. You know what I mean? But it's like, even if you're telling a factual story, it still has to be compelling. Mm-hmm. And you still have to arrange those facts in a compelling way. Because mm-hmm. if you're just telling facts, that's not a movie. That's a fucking book report. Like, mm-hmm. nobody wants to see that. You know what I mean? You have to give a story. And so our partners on it, Holland Gallagher, who's our director, and Yo Phillips, who's our writer, they really were our partners in it. And they're younger than us. And so we thought it was important to have people who were from a different generation to kind of catch a lot of the blind spots that we may have not have saw.
Right.
And we thought that was important. And so they came in and they really helped kind of shape the narrative because they were looking at this. They weren't super fans of us. And that was something that we did not want. We didn't want someone that was the ultimate Little Brother fan making this movie because they feel like they already know the story. Mm-hmm. And if they, you know, you dead in the water then. And that's just not the way documentary works. So they really came in and were able to just, you know, tell. We told our stories. We did our interviews. The interviews we shot, our personal interviews. Everyone else, we gave the questions beforehand. Because, you know, it's, you know, my grandmother, rest in peace, our mothers,
friends,
our homies, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's not like you're working with actors. You're working with people. You know what I mean? So you got to give them time to kind of think about what they want to say. So we gave them all the questions beforehand. Mm-hmm. And then when it came time for me and Pooh interview, we told Holland and Yo, like, yo, bro, we don't want nothing. Like,
just get in here and go.
Get in here, whatever mm-hmm. you ask, one take, one shot, so, that's what it is. And yeah. so that's what y'all got.
You see evolution in it. I mean, you see dark skinned Leonard in there.
Absolutely.
You see Leonard with a hairline.
Yeah,
yo, when I see the interview, I'm like, that sounds like something, but that man got hair.
He was showing everybody. He was like, look, I was like, oh my God, he looked like one of the kids from Lean on Me.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mr. Clark.
What?
What year was that? 02, 03?
Nah, that was Mystery Show.
That was 05.
05. Yeah,
it was 05 because I remember it was 05. Yeah. That was the only we talked about it briefly on QLS, but yeah, that was the only interview that I missed because when we had to do that run,
I think your son.
Yeah, that was when my son. Yeah, was born.
His son was born, so it was just me and Ninth on that run. Mm-hmm. Every time I see that, I think about it because I wasn't as polished as I am now to doing interviews.
None of us
like,
were.
I was looking at that. I was
funny
struggling.
It was funny. He was like,
Knife was asleep. Knife was asleep.
He said, why was you on BET?
I don't know. I don't work there. You trying to dance around? I ain't dancing nothing. I said, I ain't work there. I said,
raw ass Carolina nigga.
Listen, that's what it was. Like, that was fun. That was a blast from the past. Yeah, I think that was 05.
Yeah, it was 05. Nah, it was 05.
So when Ninth Wonder got the call from Hov to work with him and Hov started doing production, do you think that production area kind of dismantled the group a lot?
Absolutely not.
Nah, man. Like we was happy. We was excited for him. You know what I mean? Like, shit, we got to go to Baseline and hear it before it came out, sitting there with Hov and all that. But nah, we knew that's a big opportunity. It's fucking Jay-Z. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
And you want stuff for your team. Like you want, you know, if you know studying hip hop, most of the big producers, they get their start in groups. So we just saw it as just a natural progression, you know what I mean? So yeah, it was amazing just to know that, you know, one of your homies can make a beat on his laptop and it ends up with Jay-Z rapping over. I mean, that shit was like, oh my, like what? You know what I'm saying? And it really for us was, for me, it was a sign of the kind of the changing of the guard in terms of what constituted studio quality, you know, because for a long time, you know, you had to have when people thought of a studio, they thought of it as like, okay, it's this big, the big boards and like these big, you know, big consoles and big speakers and everything. And beat makers were pretty much thought of as, you know, like hardware. But for him to make something, you know, on a laptop, I mean, that was the beginning of software. Mm-hmm. You know, he really pioneered that, you know what I mean? So now with, you know, him with Fruity Loops, and now, I mean, that's pretty much kind of the standard with cats making records on Machine and Ableton and stuff like that. Right. And so it really was, it was validation for us. I mean, we made our first album literally in, you know, a friend's apartment, you know what I'm saying? With a mic, like the mic we recorded, listen, on, it wasn't as good as this mic. It wasn't this. It was like a little $300 mic.
Carnival MC mic.
Yeah, we had like a little joint on it, but
you know what Joe Scudder was describing?
Yeah, that was what it was. And you know what I mean? And so, but we did it, and I guess the lesson for me was just that, you know, as long as you have a taste, there aren't really no rules in music. You just have to have a degree of taste that can translate to an audience. And if you can make it make sense to them and they get it, and that's really all you need. Yeah. And we were able to do that with very limited means, and so I'm just thankful.
Why YouTube? That was the other thing I was wondering. Like, you know, did y'all even try to shop it to like the Hulu or the Netflix, anybody?
Bruh, the writers of Stranger Things were on strike.
Nah, I mean,
and Lovecraft Country's on Tubi.
Absolutely.
Like, oh my right God, now. For real?
Today.
Yes. I love TV.
Like, well, okay, I love TV too.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? I did a Showtime at the Apollo Marathon the other night. Like, watching
Straight Out of Compton on Tubi.
Yeah.
I think for us, because people always ask that question, right? Mm-hmm. And first, it started off as a joke. Like, we throw this shit up on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But then we start thinking about it like,
that's exactly what
that's where it's going. Like, I know 7-year-olds who stay on YouTube. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I know 69-year-olds who stay on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was just like, all this shit is on the internet.
It's all the same
it's
internet.
The internet.
It all hooks that's up it. To the same internet.
So the objective here was, I was talking to a homie of mine. I was just like, you know, he's like, yo, I got this project. I don't know what I should do. I said, listen, what's your objective? Are you trying to be validated by one of these companies? Are you looking for the bag? Or do you want people to see this shit? We wanted people to see our documentary. Mm-hmm. So the easiest way is anybody can go up on YouTube. You can watch. You don't got to watch it in one set.
I ain't got to explain how my mama how to log into YouTube.
Oh, everybody knows how to go on YouTube.
You can watch it on the phone. It's the on phone, TVs. It's on
iPad,
laptop.
Anywhere. Yeah. And then also what we saw, because we came into the industry of 03, when we signed the Atlantic, we saw how the music industry was changing. We real time. We was part of it. Mm-hmm. We seeing the same thing happen right now for film and television. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody trying to get caught up in that bullshit.
Nah. So, I'm not trying to be banging, trying to get the masters for my movie back in 10 years. Like, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was really, you know, YouTube was... It was the only platform that spoke directly to the Little Brother story. You know what I'm saying? You know, we were one of the first rap groups to go viral at a time when no one even knew what that was or even how to monetize it. You know what I'm saying? Because it was just so early. You know what I mean? And so a big part of that had to do with people being able to freely access our music. And it was something that was shared. And we just thought that our movie, you know, about our music and about our lives... Mm-hmm. It had to be experienced in that same way. We put it out and, you know, we dropped it on Black Friday on YouTube and, you know, we did the premiere on YouTube and my man, Devin Morrison, he hit me and was like, yo, bro, I'm about to stream this joint on my Twitch channel. Pull up. I said, hell yeah, nigga, let's go.
Twitch is popping.
You know what I mean? So I jumped on his Twitch, you know what I mean? He's screening it. I'm in the chat, like Knowledge is in the chat. Shout out to him. Like we all just chopping it up. And, you know, that was just a kind of communal experience that we would not have been able to have had we tried to do it in a traditional way. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, that just really, it just felt true to who we were and who we are. And so that was why we decided to go with YouTube.
Yeah, even getting introduced to y'all via the internet, you know, South Carolina was right there by North Carolina, but I heard about y'all via online. People do not understand how big allhiphop.com was.
Listen. Shout out to Jigsaw.
Rumor section. Yes, man. People do not realize how big that shit was.
Nah, man. All Hip Hop, SOHH, OK Player. Yes. I mean, that really was just kind of your, really just, you know, where you found out about music. You know what I'm saying? Just where all the stuff you could kind of see on the come up. That was where you found it. And, you know, back to the film, yeah, we just kind of saw, like, now we have the opportunity to go direct to consumer in a way that we didn't have in 2003. Like, we would have had Bandcamp in 2003, I wouldn't sign no fucking record deal.
In a rap. What would have made Little Brother bigger, though, right? Because you talk to rappers, and for most rappers, you some of them would say you're one of their favorite groups, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of the fans, a lot of the people that listen might not have heard Little Brother, right? What do you think would have made Little Brother bigger if it would have been maybe signing to a Ruckus that concentrates directly on underground music? It would have been, you know, a Koch record that's definitely under. Like, what do you think would have made you guys bigger?
I don't know. That's a tricky question because, like I said, the industry was changing at the time. So, you know, for us, I always say we was after the Ruckus era, but we was before. You know, whatever.
Yeah, we were the bridge.
The bridge from that to, you know.
To like the Coles and the Kendricks
and all of them. All of that, so I don't know if it was in the cards for us to be bigger, honestly. I think we are.
Yeah, we was the lead blockers. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we was sent to take out the linebacker. Like, it wasn't necessarily.
You're not going to get the glory. You're not going to get the touchdown. You're not going to. You got to do your job well, and you'll be remembered, rewarded. Honored for that, you know what I mean? Respected for that. And so, yeah, I don't know if bigger was in the cards for us, honestly, because I know who we are. You know what I mean? And
right.
You know, and I know who we are is, I don't know if that's conducive.
Nah, it wasn't. Like, I remember Minstrel Show came out and we did, I think what was the first week? It was like 18,000, something like that. You know what I mean? 18,000 records. And, you know, back then, that was the worst.
The worst. Yeah, you got a weed plant.
Yeah. Straight up. Yeah, but you said 18,000 now. Like,
but it's a phenomenal album.
Yeah. Thank you, man. But I remember, like, we did it and, it came out and I remember, talking to Amir. Shouts to Amir, man. That's big bro for real. And, you know, he was like, listen, man, y'all gonna have to go crazy. Like, y'all gonna have to perform at the label, y'all gonna have to do this, like y'all gonna have to, you know, perform even in the lobby, like y'all gonna have to do this. And the thing was, he was right. He was absolutely right. And I just talked to people, I remember having a conversation, we were just like, we ain't doing that shit.
That's not who we are.
Nah, I'm like, nigga, I just made an album called The Minstrel Show. You think I'm about to be in a label dancing on top of a fucking table? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm not, you know, like, that's just not who we are.
All up at your label.
Dancing. All in the video. Nah, so, you know, it was just one of those things. And it's really just as an artist, you know, throughout our journey, you really just have to decide what's for you and what's not. and the things that are for you, you know, I tell people all the time, you can't ever look at someone's success and, you know, think that, okay, that's what I want, because you don't know the price that they paid for that success. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You don't, you know, that may not be something that you're willing to do, or it just may not be, it may not align with who you are as a person. And so I think the biggest lesson for us, which is the beauty of this era now, which I think a lot of artists don't get, you know, they're frustrated because it's like, man, it's just so much content, it's so much, you're competing with everything. But the beautiful thing about it for us is that you have the ability to go direct to consumer, and whatever it is that you're into, you can just find an audience around that. It's like the difference mm-hmm. between, you know, in our era, it was trying to hit a moving target. It was trying to hit a moving bullseye. In this era, it's just you fire a shot, and wherever it lands, you just paint the target around that bullet. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? You just, you know, and that's what we've been able to do. And it just makes for, in us, you know, it makes for better art and just makes for happier people.
Y'all also stopped when the game shifted to everything y'all already was on. I think y'all, like y'all, it was like 9 years between projects, right? It was like 2010 to 2019. Yeah. 2010 is when you really got introduced to the Kendricks and the Coles and the Drakes. That was y'all. That's y'all energy. Like, you see, y'all, they all was inspired by you.
Yeah, man.
What y'all was doing.
Yeah.
So y'all stopped.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that was definitely a frustration of mine. It was just like, we fought so hard to get up that proverbial hill, and we got up there and was like, all right, we done.
Because you had that moment, like, you just, you know,
Petey Green moment.
Bro, like,
Petey Green walking at this night show.
Is that, yeah, I know this audience, my audience is laughing with me. They're not laughing at me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But no, it was very much that. I remember we did a show, our last LA show. This is, well, before we broke officially, this was 2010.
Kendrick, it's in the doc, it's a section with me, Kendrick, and Ab Soul. That was from that show. Wow. We had Kendrick opening on that show.
Kendrick opened. And that was like, we were in the worst shape ever. Like, we were, like, we weren't even talking. We wasn't even, it was, the energy was just, it was just foul. And I remember, like, Kendrick coming up afterwards, and he was like, yo, man, I fuck with y'all. I'm a big fan. Like, let's link, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, bro, like, cool. You know, like, dap him up, gave him up. I'm like, love what you do. And, like, that was it. But I really, you know, we look back on it now, and it was really, you know, I just hate that. I wish they could have seen us in a better place, because by that time, 2010, we was just over all this shit. We ain't like each other. We was tired of the game.
Everything.
It was like, man,
what got y'all
there?
What got y'all to the point where the group wasn't cool anymore?
Well, communicating.
Yeah, we had different goals.
We didn't know how to communicate. I'll say that. Like, you know, we didn't have the tools.
Or the time. I mean, listen,
the time or the tools.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got to think about it. And I think about this all the time, like, with artists like now, like the younger generation. They keep thinking of, okay, I want to go viral, like going viral. And, like, dude, a lot of times that shit is not what you think it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? It really, it can be the kiss of death sometimes. You know what I mean? And so for us, you know, back then, this is 2002 or, you know, whatever, you know, we went viral. And so your music goes further and faster than you have the time to develop as a person. You know what I mean? And so, it's like, bruh, this, again, me and Pooh knew each other a grand total of probably, what, 2 years before we got signed?
Wow. So we didn't know each other.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? And again, it's one thing to be like, this my man, like, we in the calf, we kicking it, we in the room freestyling, but to go from this is my man to now this is my business partner, and we are contractually bound that's together.
That sucks.
Dude. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It was a lot. So, yeah. I mean, looking back, you didn't realize it then when you in it, but looking back, you like, yo, that was a fucking lot. Like, that was a lot we was trying to navigate together. We didn't know each other, really, honestly.
Nah, straight up.
And we didn't know the game. We didn't know shit.
And then y'all still had your personal lives. Y'all,
yeah, I had two kids. Yeah, my boys were young at the time. But yeah, it was, we was a lot we was trying to figure out.
So we just didn't have the time, the tools to really know how to communicate with each other, to understand what was going on. Like, shit, we didn't know each other. So, like, even now, my big thing is I need to understand why, right? Your answer is your answer. Mm-hmm. But if I understand you, I know why you answered that way. So now I know shit he gonna say and why he gonna say it before I even ask the question.
And likewise, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that then. So, and he didn't know that about me. So it'd be things where in the doc, we talk about.
You had to learn each other.
Yeah. It's like doing the labels. So when we got off Atlantic, we had Capitol Records wanted to sign us. I was talking with Shaka Zulu's assistant. Yeah, we were supposed to meet with Shaka. So we had all these things moving after we got off Atlantic. But he don't understand why I'm like, shit, let's give it another go. And I don't understand why he like, fuck that shit, I'm off that. Like, mm-hmm. I do my own thing.
Yeah.
So just not having that understanding and not knowing how to talk to each other, man, that was, I tell people all the time, and it's not just in a relationship with a partner, spouse, significant other. It's all your relationships. If you don't know how to communicate and talk and actually listen, because communication is listening.
That's
you know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you don't know how to do that, that shit going, it's not going to end up well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we was.
But people can't be afraid to talk, though. Like, you gotta know you can pick your phone up, call your peoples, say what you need to say. And even if they feel a way, that's still going to be your people when
still
you're
your
people.
Nah, 100%. You know I mean? And I think this generation now, you know, like, I mean, because my boys, my sons are, they're 23 and 18. And the thing I noticed with their generation, they're far more emotionally intelligent than we are, in tune than we are. You know what I mean? Like, they got all the TikTok terms and the therapy term. Like, these niggas know all that shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
that's the evolution of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're far more emotionally, you know, available than we are.
Gotta remember, we came up off the A Man Gotta Be a Man.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everybody, this is Carrie Champion, and I'm here to announce that the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards on April 27th. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with your Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit. Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event you want to be at. You don't want to miss it because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future. Building off the hard work our parents have done before us, we all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and Brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day. Because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Artesian, premium cocktails on demand.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
And you don't show your feelings and you don't cry.
Gotta
you,
hardcore,
don't,
nigga.
You gotta be hard, nigga.
Hard, nigga.
Yeah, that work, that does not
that don't work,
work.
Nah, that
so,
don't work.
And what you were saying, Shaw, like about the just that time, like you said, we left kind of before that wave. You know, that 9-year span, that span from 2010 to 2019, you know, when we came back, you know, that just gave us time to grow up. You know what I'm saying? And you know, it was a bill that was gonna, it was coming due, you know what I mean? Yes. So it's like, we paid it then, you know, we needed those 9 years because we had such a quick kind of ascension. But, yeah, we just needed that time to just grow up.
I saw Donald Glover say recently that all new, most new rappers now, and I think he kind of meant like that generation that started in 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
Were because of Kanye. I would say Kanye and Lil Brother.
Absolutely.
That's
yeah,
what I would
absolutely.
Say.
Yeah, man, Kanye was, we had, God, Kanye, he first came to Durham 2004.
It
was before, I think had College Dropout came out.
Nah, it was before.
College
yeah,
Dropout
before.
Was old.
It
was before. Because Get Rich or Die Trying.
Oh, yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, yeah. Nah,
so it was before then.
That might have been 2003, something like
it
that.
It might have been 2003 then. It was before College Dropout, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had at the time the records that was bubbling. He had the Stand Up by Ludacris that was out. And he was about to put out the This Way record he had did with Dilated Peoples. But he was in Durham doing some kind of like conference or whatever. And so he was there. And, you know, this is before anything. Like, he's just, you know, chilling. And he just would walk around just like rapping out of nowhere. Like, yo, hey, my nigga, yo, Kanye and Fonte is like he would just be rapping like, bro. Like, but, and I thought he was, you know, acting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But now, you know, 20 plus years later, it's clear. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't an act. Like,
he's the same. His acting is on a different level.
It's just on a higher platform, exactly. But he's the same he's always been. But yeah, but back then, we did shows, you know, we toured with him, you know, we opened up and everything. And, yeah, man, it was a fun time. You know what I mean? You know, you could kind of see just him putting the pieces together, and you could see him also really kind of struggling with fame to some degree. Like, I remember we were at this was like South Beach. You remember it was at
the Billboard Hip Hop Awards.
Yeah, we were in like South Beach. He was in Miami for like a weekend, whatever. And he had his Rockefeller chain, and we were going to the club, and he would take his chain out and, you know, have his chain out in the club. But then the minute we left, he would tuck it back in. And that was just something that I always saw, you know, when you speak, you know, you ask about, you know, why weren't we bigger? I think one of the things, well, first off, it was a choice. It definitely was a choice. And that was something that we really want to make clear in the documentary, that the Little Brother story is not a sad story
at all.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, it was really, you know, choices that we made. And I think for me, I kind of had my, you know, Ghost of Christmas Past, Present, Scrooge kind of thing. And that I saw a lot of these guys when they were kind of on the come up and was able to kind of see what fame did to them. Yeah, mm-hmm. did to them. And not just, you know, like they were just, you know, prisoners or something, but to see the effect that had on their lives and how they had to really live. It wasn't just, yeah, everyone wants the money. Everyone wants that. But that ain't all it come with.
Was tucking your chain in you know, being scared of fame or just not wanting to get robbed.
Well, I mean, it was
probably
it was
a little bit of both. Yeah.
But it was very, but it was real. Like, he wasn't.
It's like an image that you have to have in certain places. Yeah. You know?
Exactly.
And then when you leave, you back regular.
It's over. He back regular. And because, I mean, because when he was like kicking it with us, I mean, we just
kicked it.
Yeah, we just kicking it. But when the camera's on, he knew how to become Kanye.
I got to be me.
A different way.
Amplified version of who I am without the lights and the camera.
So little brother wasn't willing to perform, basically.
Nah, man. Because that's not, you know, this is a long game.
First of all, that shit's exhausting.
Fam. Mm-hmm. And unsustainable.
Very unsustainable. You burn out quick.
But y'all have always shown y'all humor, especially in videos.
But that's who we are.
Yeah.
Naturally. Like, who I am in this interview is who I am when this interview is over, is who I am when I get on this plane to go home, is who I am when I get home. Like, mm-hmm. I am who I am, and it's not, well, I talk to people when the lights come on. I don't really talk to people when the lights go off, but that's the difference. I don't like people. That's the difference.
Why would you be in the room, dark room with strangers?
That's not the conversation we're having. Not the conversation we're having. Not the conversation we're having. It's,
nope. Yeah, not a back out.
This is not the conversation we're here for.
Yeah. Nah, man. I mean, we just, you know, I just saw, like, when I looked at a lot of the people that, you know, I looked up to in the game and looked at the people that were able to have that longevity, that was something that was always important to me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Really being able to stand the test of time and be in the game. And you know, this is a game where with music and just entertainment, just art in general, I really do believe that it's a game that the longer you play, the luckier you get. You know what I'm saying? The longer you stay in it. But you're only going to stay in it for a long time if you're doing things that you enjoy. You know what I mean? You otherwise, and like, I don't care. Like, people, they say, you know, looking from the outside, they're like, oh, man, if I had an opportunity, I would do anything. I would do whatever I would do. And it's like, nah. Mm-hmm.
Say that to the wrong person.
Listen.
Say that to the
wrong. Say that in the wrong dark room. Hey, it's going, yo, listen, man. Hey, seriously. And this, and you have to make those choices, because this game, like me and Pooh, like we was talking, you know, in the break room, you know, man, this game, it don't know what to do with niggas that ain't thirsty. Like, they don't know what to do with that. Like, when you are not, you know, the whole thing of just, oh, yo, you do whatever, you know what I'm saying? That's hungry. You got to be hungry. That's not, I'll do whatever. That's not hunger. That's thirst. Yeah. You should never be thirsty.
Man, what you're saying is so true, because when you talk about these recording contracts or just contracts people be signing in general, you can't get somebody to sign some bullshit if they not extra thirsty.
Anyway.
Like, if they got leverage and, you know, they don't need it, they'll negotiate what they want.
But that's
and those people will negotiate with you.
But that's if they have leverage. But see, but most of these contracts, especially back in the day, you find somebody that got a little spark that wants to be the next artist and says, okay, they feel like that'll be an opportunity for them. And they'll feel like, you know what, I'll get to that opportunity and then I'll make it right. Mm-hmm. But then they don't realize they signed for 10 years or 10
tough
albums.
To make it right.
And there is no making it right.
Nah, take advantage of that naivete, man.
Yeah.
And that's shit.
I feel like there's a story here.
I'm not. That's who I am, but that don't have nothing to do with what I'm about to ask.
She's getting used to this.
So I'm about to ask right now, how important, with all that being said, how important is, like, awards to you? Like, and because you guys are very, very, very stern on who y'all are and all of that. And like you said earlier, you don't know if who you are is conducive to some shit like this, mm-hmm. or, you know, especially nowadays and the thirst and, you know, versus hunger. So how important are award shows and, like, getting awards to artists like you?
Man, I'll go first. I was nominated, my other group, the Foreign Exchange R&B group, we were nominated for a Grammy in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to go to the Grammys and really see what that experience was. And I think having that experience just showed me, like, this shit is kind of a racket, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just keeping it in a band. Like, that shit was, I mean, it was, you know, it was great to be honored. But again, this is just the behind the scenes stuff that people don't get. You know what I mean? You know, when you go to these shows, first and foremost, you know, at least at that time, you know, you still got to buy tickets. You still got to pay for, like, this shit don't come with a check at all. Mm-hmm, you can get out there and you can try to make something shake on your own if you want to do, like, I know the Roots, they do their Grammy jam session every year, whatever. So if you want to kind of do that, you can, but generally speaking, just as a nominee, like, everything is on you. So this is, you know.
You got to pay to go to the Grammys if you're nominated?
Yeah.
They pay for your flight.
They give you a ticket, but you get two tickets. You get tickets for you. So at the time, it
then
was
they
like.
They give you some discount tickets.
Right. So it's like, so if it's me and you, if me and him is Grammy nominated, it's like, okay, y'all get free tickets to the show. But anyone you want to bring,
gotta pay.
Y'all gotta pay, yeah. And we'll let you get it for half off. But you still gotta pay.
And how much is it?
Half off still like $100 or something.
Oh no. Not at the time when I did it.
Oh well, I know when
I don't know what it is.
When
now.
Dreamville was nominated, and Luke went, he got a ticket. I think Doe got a ticket, and I think any extra tickets would have been like $100 or something. It might have been more. I don't remember. I wasn't going, so I didn't care. You know what I mean?
I know that there was tickets even for the BET Awards at some point. Like, you had to pay. I remember I wanted to go 1 year, and I had to pay, like, it was like $340 or something like that.
Yeah.
I didn't pay. $340.
Oh, so we might have been getting a super duper discount.
At the time when I went, the tickets for the Grammys, and again, this is 2010, so, you know, I don't know what it is now, but yeah, this is 2010. Like, tickets for the Grammys, it was just $1,200 a piece. In order for us to go, you know what I mean, me and Nicolay, my partner, shouts to him, we went, and so our tickets were free, but then everyone else, like, we brought, you know,
family, everybody. Yeah,
that was $600 a pop. You know what I'm saying? So that's $1,200 on tickets. Then you got, you know, hotels, flights, like, you know, you got to buy clothes, everything. We had to pay, like, a PR person, you know what I'm saying, to walk you the red carpet, to talk up your nomination and everything. And, you know, and I've never, like, we never talked about it. You know, it was something that we didn't just have time to get into the doc. But, like, man, after I came back from the Grammys, like, nigga, I had to take out a loan. I had to take out, like, a personal loan. I'm like, God damn, I done spent about damn $8,000 out of this bitch. You know what I'm saying? So to your original question with the awards, I think that, in my experience, I was glad I got to see it, but ultimately, I'm just like, I'm good. I don't care.
Because, again, it plays to image. It plays to image.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, it's all, you know, to be nominated for a Grammy, like, to be, you know, amongst, you know, to sit amongst, you know, be in that room and see it. Like, I'm watching the show and it's like Kenny G is like standing right there, like same hair, like same everything. And that's another thing too with the Grammys, dude, specifically. Like, y'all watch it on TV at home, and it's that shit like 3 hours. You know what I'm saying?
It's not 3 hours in real time.
It's longer.
It's longer. At the time when we went, the Staples Center was like closing down. So, like, they have like the pre-Grammy brunch before, and, you know, you get a little food, whatever, and then they take you over to the main hall to the Grammy ceremony, and all the vendors in the Staples Center, they shutting down. So it's no food. Like, it's niggas the Hunger Games for real. For hours. It was like one dude we caught that had like the little he had like some candy and shit. He had like, you know, little Snicker bars and damn M&Ms and shit. So we bought like a bag of M&Ms and some Snickers and shit. We sitting in that bitch, goddamn, taking the M&Ms, passing the shit down. And I'm like, nigga, this is supposed to be music greatest night, and I'm eating goddamn M&Ms in the Staples Center.
Ain't no food.
Not when we went. I'm just telling, I don't want to speak about my experience.
I've never been to the Grammys, but I've been to a BET Hip Hop Awards. And
I know
that
ain't
shit,
no food there.
That shit was about recording, that was about five hours. And I was like, hell
nah,
no.
No food.
Yeah, nah. We walked out. I left though. We were supposed to present. It was taking too long, man. I had to go.
Oh my God.
He really left. Like, we supposed to present. He was like, I'm giving y'all 10 minutes. I'm like, he ain't gonna leave.
He was there all day.
I'm like, he ain't gonna leave.
Nah, that's real.
He gonna leave. I envy. I'm like,
I love it.
I'm like, yeah, I'm not beat for none of that stuff.
Nah, man.
And I mean, like, for me, you know, yeah, it'd be cool to be nominated for a Grammy. I ain't never been nominated, but at the end of the day, it's, hey, look, I can't be somewhere too long and not just say what the fuck I need to say.
Right. So listen,
I just don't go to places where I'm going to be there a long time. Cause
you might have to say something.
It might have to say something.
Yeah. Let me tell you the truth.
And then learning what all this is. You know what I mean? Like,
it's a campaign.
It's a campaign.
It's not a meritocracy. Like, the minute you, and that was, I guess, the thing for me. But once I saw that, you know, it was really, you know, it's super political. It's super, you know, who you know. Like, it's a lot of those things. But, you know, for me, all I cared about was just making the music. And, you know, if my music is standing up against somebody, you know, just judging on the basis of the music. Once you get into all this other shit, it's just like, again, it was educational. It's like, oh, okay, I know that's what it is now. All right, cool. I'm good on it. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing I want to make clear. It's not that we don't care.
Yeah.
We just understand what it is.
And what it's going to take if you want to make that run. It's like running for president. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't understand why, though, like, I know y'all got to go, but why couldn't y'all just consistently be yourself? Because, like I said, you can watch the doc and see the personality, see the humor. I was watching an old video. I don't even know why. I was watching old videos this weekend, and the video where you let your mom speak the verse.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Life changed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I'm like, y'all do stuff like, y'all do your own thing that's personality driven. So why not just.
We're not thirsty. That's the key. We're not thirsty. Because, it's been things people like, yo, you want to do this? And we like, nah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can ask our PR guy. He be like, yo, I got this. We can do this. And we would go right through the list. No, no, yeah, no, no, yeah, no. And he'd be like, anybody else would be like, oh shit, I'm doing all that. We like, nah.
Buzz is like, it's far more intentional. You know what I mean?
You gotta curate it.
Yeah, 100%. You gotta curate. You have to curate the kind of experience that you wanna give your fans. So like, come into Breakfast Club, like, you know, we both Carolina. Like, mm-hmm. there's a connection there. You know what I mean? So it's like, you don't just do everything. It's not just, you know, coming in with a Uzi and just, very targeted shots. Because at this point in the game, you know, we're 20 year vets. And, you know, the energy that you have, you know, you really have to conserve, and you only got to use it on the shit that really fucking matters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't just be out here, at least in my opinion, you can't just be out here just moving crazy and just, you know, expending all your energy and your time on
you
things.
You do not have an unlimited amount of bullets in the chamber mm-hmm. at 40. Five,
44,
45 years old.
I don't believe that.
That's the whole job.
No.
Yeah, I'll be 45.
I'll be 44 on Monday.
You mean time, like physically, how we feel about doing things?
Yeah.
Okay, because I feel
you can do whatever, right? Okay. You can do whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you see like someone like Nas that's on a run right now.
Killer Mike best rap song, best rap performance.
A sweep.
Absolutely. You can do whatever you want to do. What I'm saying is you got to be very... You got to be strategic about what you're doing, because the energy, like just putting energy into things that don't make no sense.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
You know, when you're 20, you got all the fucking energy in the world.
Yeah.
When you're 40, you like, hold up now.
And you have to be specific and strategic, like you were saying, because I'm a firm believer that the work you do is the work that you're going to create more of for yourself. Mm-hmm. So if you start doing sucker shit, you just going to get more sucker opportunities.
You know what I mean? That's
so right. I'm like, nah, like we just gone and set this shit up off break. Like this what we doing, this what we not doing, and just hold that boundary. And again, it just speaks to just, I think, just the sustainability of it. Yeah. You know, we really wanted to do this for a long time. And, you know, we knew we wasn't going to do that just doing... Moving like how we saw a lot of other rappers mm-hmm. were moving, and just a lot of just entertainment was moving. We had to kind of come and do something that was very specific to who we were. And we kind of had a chance to go through that again with Luke, you know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Speak on, you know, with Luke, but.
Yeah, it's working with Luke, signed to Dreamville and just doing his album. And he was very adamant, like, I'm going to do me. like I'm not, you know, yes, I want things, but I'm going to do what's comfortable for me. Like it was a key point conversation we had, and he was like, yo, I want to be able to be me everywhere. And I said, well, if that's what you want to do, this is kind of the roadmap for it. And that's just who he is. Like, he's not a big mixy person. He's not, you know, he deals with anxiety, he talks about it. And so we have to be very strategic in how we move with him. And it's just traces of how we move and who we are. Yeah. I see that mm-hmm. in him. And so I was kind of perfect for that. Cause I'm like, I know what this is.
We've been down that road.
And it was just one of those things where it was like, yo, this is deja vu like a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like,
because the thing is, like, and that's again with the artist now, I just, kind of keep telling them, like, bro, y'all don't understand. I know this shit is crazy, but whatever it is you're into, you can find an audience for that. That's like, right. Luke, and, you know, in particular,
in
like,
cars
he was,
and
he's in the cars, painting. Like, he's painting. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, if you don't want to do Breakfast Club, like, if that's not your thing and you just want to get your Bob Ross on and do little Instagram snippets of you painting,
you can
or
do
whatever,
that.
You can do that, and that shit'll go off. You'll find a community of people that are
that.
Into it. There's a market for it, mm-hmm. and you can go directly to them. And that was just something that wasn't really, you know, back, you know, to your original question earlier about, you know, why we weren't bigger. I just think at that time there were choices, definite choices that we made, but also it was very much marketing back then wasn't really tailored to the artist. It was just kind of a one size fits all.
This is
put your this album chain on.
Your album is coming. Yeah. This is what needs to happen.
Yeah, hold this bottle.
And, nah, legit.
You're going to this radio station. Yeah.
And it's like, bro, like we don't even drink like that. Like this doesn't make sense. You know what I'm saying? I don't, you know, no moral objection to it, but I'm like, this doesn't translate.
Yeah.
And you just didn't really have the latitude to figure that out back then in a way that the artists do now. And so it really is a beautiful time. And that's why we wanted to take advantage now of just being able to go direct to consumer, go directly to our audience with the documentary. And it's just been a beautiful experience.
Man. I got two more. How many young boys are like just like this? Like, we don't want to change. We don't want to. I don't want to have to do all of this that XYZ is doing to get where XYZ is at. You know, if I never get there, I never get there. Like, this interview and your documentary is definitely gonna, like, that's good for people, because other guys like you out there, young Thank boys you. Who like underground rap, and they rap about things that they feel like won't be accepted or conducive to what today's hip hop is or today's rap or whatever. And this is inspirational to a lot of boys and a lot of grown men
Thank
like
you.
This.
Thank you. That was part of the hope, was that people can hear our story and see some of themselves in our story. And that's something we, even
we
in
didn't
our
have
music,
that. We didn't have that roadmap.
It was like, hey man, it's the way you got to do it. Do it.
I got two more questions, because I know Jess hungry and she want to go. But Andre 3000 said he doesn't rap anymore because he's 48 and he has nothing to talk about. Being OGs in y'all 40s, how did that statement make you feel?
We talked about it on something else, man. It's like, we look at ourselves as writers, and you don't have an age limit. You know, we not athletes. We not, you know, out there trying to dunk, and we write. You should be getting better with time.
Even to your point about with Killer Mike and just the, you know what I mean?
Sure. Hey.
You know, when you get old, there was an arc I read like years ago that talked about how most creative breakthroughs happen in like your late 30s, early 40s, because that's when both sides of your brain learn to talk to each other. You know what I mean? And so that just, I was like, damn, that's right. And so, you know, it really is a thing where in this business, again, it just goes against everything, because if you ain't owned by 25, you know, you done lost it. And, you know, a lot of you know, labels and just, you know, a lot of industry people, they're reluctant to work with older talent, what they perceive as older talent, when that's the time when, you know, you're at your best, you know what I'm saying? Because you've lived a life. I remember we interviewed Chris Rock on QLS some time back, and he was talking about
Questlove Supreme.
Yeah, I'm just talking. Another iHeart property. But yeah, shouts to Questlove and my people's Team Supreme. But yeah, he was interviewing Chris Rock, and he was talking about how, you know, in the early days of his stand-up, he didn't really have shit to talk about. He was like, you know, your early age stand-up is just dick jokes and shit. Because it's like, what do you have? But it's not until you go and you live and you get divorced, you have kids, you damn, like, you know, you really have things to talk about. And so that was kind of for us, you know, with the Andre statement, you know, we talked about it. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of all in the eye of the beholder. If he feels that he doesn't have anything to say at 48, that's his creative journey. That's how he feels. You know what I mean? And it takes time to figure out, you know, with rap, we've heard so long that rap is a young man's game, and who you are, you know, when you're young, so much of that is driven by hunger and like anger and just trying to make it, you know. Nigga, what do you rap about after you done sold 10 million records and you ain't struggling no more?
And it's all about what you are willing to share, right? Like,
that part.
Absolutely.
We don't have to get on this radio and talk about our family. We don't have to talk about our kids. We do, but we don't have to. I don't got to talk about mental health and going to therapy, but I do. So it's about what you are willing to share.
What you're willing to share.
What you're willing to share. Yeah.
And my last question is, what does 20 years feel like for y'all?
Like a good night's sleep.
Absolutely.
Like, legit. Yeah.
It a lot of this feels like a year ago. 2 years ago. I mean, we lost 2 years, but with the pandemic, we lost a little bit of time. But nah, it don't feel like 20 years at all. Like, it's one of them things where you look back and be like, shit, like, I'm about to be 44, fam. I was just 21, right? Like, walking around, like, what's going on here? And so that's a blessing, you know what I mean? Like, it ain't been a hard 20 for us. I mean, we've been through our share of things, but you know, we ain't have, you know, no overdoses,
man.
Thank God.
You know, nobody locked up. You know what I'm saying? We ain't had none of them type of issues. So it's just one of them things, you know, you blessed that it feels like it only been a short amount of time, because that means we got 20 more plus
time to go.
To go. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's just gratitude. I think that's what it feels like for me. It's just gratitude. Just looking at, you know, a lot of cats that we came in the game with that, you know, didn't make it for whatever, for various reasons, you know what I'm saying? And guys that were, and that were like crazy talented, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, oh my God, why didn't this person get this? And, you know, it really is just a lesson, you know, man, the race ain't always to the swift. You know what I mean? It really is, you know, when you see somebody that's on or popping or whatever, there are a million different factors that play into that person having that platform. Mm-hmm. The least of which is probably their talent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Talent don't, I mean, that shit is,
but we see
whatever.
It every day.
Oh yeah. You know, so for us to just, you know, still be here and, you know, 20 years later and just to be not just still here and still like relevant, but just sharper mentally. Like I really feel like as a writer, I'm just getting started. Like there's just things and that, you know, as an MC and, you know, just as a creator, there's just tools in my toolbox that I have now that I didn't have 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, I just feel reinvigorated. You know what I mean?
And even to that point for me, like, people told me my best two albums writing has been my last two.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like wine.
Like wine.
Will we ever get a Fonte, Pooh, Knife Wonder reunion?
Nah.
Damn, man. Didn't even think about it. Yeah. It was like maybe there was a possibility in a couple of years. Just why
niggas
why
be acting like they don't know, they don't understand.
I guess you don't know what the issue is.
From the jump, that's why we gotta watch the doc.
Yeah, it's in the doc. I mean, we talk about everything, but nah, man.
Like that, it don't seem like it's nothing y'all can't reconcile.
Didn't seem like they could be like at least a maybe.
It's not even thing about reconciling anything. It's just
alive, you know.
Yeah. It's that's just not what it's gonna be.
You know,
Little Brothers, Fonte and Pooh, and Knife Wonder is Knife Wonder, and you know, we wish him all the best and, you know, whatever all his endeavors, and we gonna keep doing us, and that's just what it is.
Damn.
You gonna ask Beyonce what's up with Michelle and Kelly and Farrah and
they
all y'all gonna
get
back. But they might not.
Come on, Farrah.
But if Beyonce be like,
she said Farrah. That ain't happening.
Kelly and Michelle.
Kelly and Michelle might have.
You
might get a shot. She started naming, you know, all of them.
Farrah, Latavia, and all that.
Everybody they started with.
Nah.
Beyonce say no, you're going to be like, damn, for real? That's it. Nigga said no.
But it's not the same, though, because Destiny's Child, we got like, it felt like we got closure with that. I don't feel like we got closure with Little Brother.
The documentary is closure.
Yeah. He said no, Charlamagne. The documentary is all you're gonna get.
Sometimes we're not afforded the closure we want.
Damn. I know, I'm a girl,
but it's closure. You get the closure you get.
Well, definitely check out the documentary. Yes. Learn about Little Brother.
May the Lord watch the Little Brother story.
Leonard with
that was fun. That took me, like, watching videos, because, you know, we weren't even thinking about video. I wasn't thinking about video.
Right, no,
back
for
then.
Real.
To see that, I was like, damn.
Hell and no, we were surprised we even video. Had that footage.
Yeah. Hell no, he wasn't thinking. He didn't know who he was. He said, hold on, what?
He didn't know who he was. I showed everybody.
He ran over there and got some cream for his face. I said, that was you when you was dark skinned. That was you.
You got the Columbia, South Carolina, baby.
803-803-1039.
Absolutely, man.
Well, it's Little Brother. Now,
thank y'all for having us, man. This was a lot of fun. And just congratulations.
Thank you.
I love
so
the
much.
Baltimore. I was hearing the tears. Yeah. I was like, yes.
Thank so you so much.
So now, congratulations.
It's the Breakfast Club. Good morning.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
State Farm Insurance knows that understanding and investing in our cultural identity is paramount in protecting our future. We know what it's like to go from nothing to something, to wish that we had better financial literacy when we were younger. Luckily, State Farm is here to help with funding programs like Project Ready, which is committed to education achievement and has already awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to Black and Brown youth since 2021. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.